At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And get ready for a little comic relief with Nick Swardson today. You might know him as Terry Bernardino from Reno 911. And he's in every Adam Sandler movie ever. He's going to tell you some great stories from the set of Reno, from exactly how the show was shot. It was very much a ad-lib, improv-type show. You might also know him, like I said, from his work from Adam Sandler, Happy Madison Productions. Nick is one of Sandler's boys. He wrote Grandma's Boy. He starred in Bucky Larson. Great story about a big-time actor who did the table read for Bucky Larson as a favor. Nick's also working with Adam on all the movies they're doing just for Netflix. The Ridiculous Six, The Do-Over. He's got great stories about how he met Sandler and what it's like to work for him. Nick's also got a huge fear of elevators. Yeah, he wanted to make sure that there were stairs at the Podcast One studio, which there was. My amazing producer, Stacy, helped him find the stairs. He did not want to be in an elevator. He also hates working with monkeys. Well, duh, who doesn't? You hear why. And if you want to see some of Nick's hilarious stand-up, yeah, you're going to check this guy out. He's a nutter. Catch him on the Adam Sandler and Friends Do-Over Comedy Tour with Sandler, David Spade, and Rob Schneider. What a lineup. It's a rare comedy tour outing for Adam, one of the few tours he's going to do, and it's only hitting seven cities. Starts May 19th in San Francisco, May 22nd, Santa Barbara, 23rd, Chicago, May 24th, Washington, D.C., 25th, Brooklyn, 26th, Boston, and 27th at the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville. Go check it out. Sandler, Schneider, Spade, and Swardson. Wow, the four S's. Hilarious, hilarious conversation with Nick Swardson coming up. All right, this is great. I always love this. Doing these shows with someone I've never met before. We've exchanged some awesome texts. I think the first one we were talking about how big our penises were.
Yep, immediately went to penises.
Always a winner.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with it. If you don't know somebody, you want to know about their penis real quick.
And you have to see how the person reacts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, is this somebody that I can have some fun with or not? Because I remember that we have a mutual friend, Nick Mundy.
Yeah.
And he's like, do you want to talk to Swartz? I'm like, hell yeah. So I text you, hey, Matt, I got this podcast. You're like, well, it depends, you know, how big's your penis or something like that. Or what kind of outfit should we wear? I'm like, sailor outfits.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
And you didn't wear the sailor outfit, which I'm a little bit disappointed
in. I said I was going to wear a diaper or something. Well, I knew when Nick referred to you, he was like, you know Chris Sherker? I was like, I know who he is, I don't know him, but
right.
He was like, yeah, he's great, man, he's my boy. So I was like, okay, anybody that knows Nick is a mental patient.
But then speaking of mental things,
right.
you said, hey, man, I'm deathly afraid of elevators, I need to take the stairs.
Yeah.
And this is not a joke. Now, I took it seriously, but then I was like, going through our text, it's like, well, is this like a double entendre? Is it a joke that's not a joke, but it's really a joke?
Right.
You know?
It kind of sucks being a comic because it's like you can't – everything you say people take is a joke. So it's like even if you were like, hey, my dad died, like everyone starts laughing. Everyone's like, no way. He died? And then it's like, no, he died.
He really died.
Can never,
yeah.
Can't, but yeah, the elevator one, that's why like I stressed. It's my biggest fear, elevators. I hate them. They
really?
Horrify me. Yeah, they horrify me.
So you work in showbusiness,
right.
LA, New York, a lot of meetings, a lot of skyscrapers.
I mean, New York is the real tricky one because like I've worked with Comedy Central for 20 years.
Right.
And they're like on the 45th floor. So, you know, it was like, you know, stuff like that, I just kind of have to suck it up. But then they have to, like, sometimes it's so emasculating. But, like, I'll be like, I'll have, like, I have to grab, like, a security guard and have them, like, ride with me. And then, this isn't a joke, a couple times I've had them hold my hand. And I'm totally serious. And I'll be just, it'll be some dude who's like, wait, what do I got to do? I'm like, yeah, can you just bear with me?
And he's like, is this real?
Yeah, but you know, yeah, he's cool with it.
So, but why is it something that happened to you, or is it just one of those claustrophobic
things? It's just
things?
One of those things, and I always had it since I was a kid. And then one time I was filming in Boston, and the hotel we were at, they didn't have stairs, and they were like, "Whoa, no, there's so many security." People always like have all that bullshit, like, you know, there's like too much security, you know, with this shit. So I had to take the elevator, and so. I was with my buddy Jay, and the elevator got stuck.
No, and you're already scared of elevators.
I'm already freaked out. So the elevator gets stuck, and I swear, my hand to God, I completely snap. I don't even, like, press the call button or anything. And I rip the doors open, which is something you could easily do. But for me, like...
You've got, like, that mother strength, though, like when the kid's trapped
yeah,
in the car.
Yeah, literally. And my buddy Jay's like, Nick, chill. Dude, chill out. I'm like, no. And I rip the doors open and I go, jump. And it was in between floors, which is insanely dangerous
right.
to do. And I'm like, jump. And Jay's like, no. I'm like, jump. So Jay like goes under my legs and jumps out the door.
Jumps where?
He jumps on the next floor.
Oh, okay.
And then I jump out. It was insane. He's like, dude, what in the was that? I'm like, I don't know. He's like, you know, we could have died. If, like, the elevator had started and we were in between floors.
I'm scared of monkeys because – I'm not scared of monkeys, but I always have an issue with monkeys because mm-hmm. when I was a kid, I went to Gator World
right.
somewhere in Florida. I drove down there from Canada, sounds, Gator World.
Sounds classy.
And I was absolutely. Like the plastic gators, like, put your head in here. Ah. And I was feeding the monkey and the monkey bit my finger. And wouldn't let go. And I still remember, you know, you put your quarter into the thing, get like the little grains of sand right. or whatever, wheat, whatever monkeys eat, bugs.
What?
Well, maybe it was a healthy, gluten-free monkey food. Yeah. And the monkey bit my food, and bit my finger and hung on to it. So that, to me, is always why, like, if you would have had a pet monkey in here,
right.
I would have to say you got to leave the monkey outside.
God, I'm so glad I didn't bring my monkey.
Me
well,
too.
One of my best friends who directed my show, Pretend, time on Comedy Central two seasons
available now on Netflix.
Yeah, it's available somewhere.
Yeah, YouTube.
I have no idea where.
Second generation bootleg on the streets of New York.
Yeah. My director, paralyzing fear of monkeys, because when he was a kid he got fucking attacked. He went to a zoo and one of the monkeys escaped and fucking like chased him and like I think it like tackled him or something.
He just opened the cage.
I don't know. It was something like went wrong and a monkey just got loose and ran after my buddy Tom, and so he was terrified. And then when we were filming Grandma's Boy,
mm-hmm.
and we had a monkey on the set, and you know everybody was kind of like, so it was a big monkey, and so we were kind of like a little scared. And then the trainer would like slap it and like tackle it and like wrestle it and like shake it, and we're like, what are you doing? What the fuck? And he's like, you have to show dominance. You know, he's like, I've got to show dominance.
Oh, okay.
So just to make sure. And then this is my favorite part. He goes, I've got to show dominance because he's at that in-between stage. And I go, what does that mean? And he goes, well, he's at that stage where when they're younger, they're really docile and friendly. And then when they grow into adults, that's when they take over on their own and they can really, like, lose their mind. And I was like, what? Like, he's in between that? Like, how in between is he? Like, what level are we talking about?
Is he at a two?
Yeah, and there's all these rules. Like, he was like, don't show him your teeth. Don't scream around him. Like, all these things. And I was like, okay. And I didn't really have any scenes with the monkey, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
But my buddy Dante, who played the drug dealer, he had all the scenes with the monkey. So, and they were like, don't feed the monkey, whatever. So Dante would like put the monkey on his shoulders. And like the second he put it on his shoulders, I would like start screaming and like showing my teeth at the monkey and like throwing food at it. Because I wanted him to like rip Dante's head off. I wanted to see a monkey attack.
Gotcha.
Got you. You've got no. And then there was that one incident about that fucking dude, that couple that owned a monkey. Do you remember this?
No.
6 years ago. This couple.
I like how you know the exact date. 6 years ago, it was spring.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a beautiful, glorious day. No, I'll never forget it because it's the craziest thing ever. Because this company, this couple owned a monkey, and they kept it at like I don't know what you would call it.
On a retreat or
no? They kept it like a kennel or something like that.
Yeah.
So it was the monkey's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So they brought him a birthday cake. This is, I swear to God, you can Google this. They bring the monkey a birthday cake. Apparently, one of the other monkeys, they said, got jealous that the other monkey had a birthday cake. They attacked the guy. And when a monkey attacks you, it bit off his nose, his fingers, and his penis and balls.
What?
Yeah. It rips them off. And that's, I was so obsessed with it. And that's their go-to move, is they go after your fingers and your genitals and, like, your face.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's fucking insane.
What kind of a monkey is it?
I don't know.
A big one, or?
I don't know. A fucking... I think it's, like, a fucking... I don't know.
Orangutan?
I don't know. No, it's not an orangutan. I don't know.
Because I was going from cute little kind of like zoo monkey.
Right.
And now we've got, they're biting off penises.
Yeah. No, it's insane. And I was so obsessed because they brought him a birthday cake. Like,
yeah, I mean, come on. It's like they're trying to be nice to this monkey.
Yeah. It's like, but does the monkey need a birthday cake? I mean, the monkey has no idea it's his birthday.
Since we're on
he's going to like throw poop at his candles and well, yeah, you know what I mean?
Exactly, rub it all over his face. And while we're on the subject of zoo animals, I'm sure everyone is just completely riveted to what we're talking about here. I went to the zoo a couple months ago, and I'd never seen a real live hippopotamus.
Right.
Which apparently is the most dangerous animal in the animal kingdom.
I've heard that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and they look like something out of Star Wars. They don't look real. It's a big fat thing, and it's got these little stubby legs, and it's walking around. And there's a sign on the wall that says, "Danger, hippopotamuses spray their territory." So I'm not thinking anything of it. And then this hippopotamus lifts up his tail and just poops all over the wall, and it's a splatter poop. It's like,
really?
Yes, everywhere. It's one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen in my life. And this lady was standing here, and she said, "You're lucky you weren't here yesterday." I'm like, "Why?" "Because he didn't poop on the wall. He pooped on the people. He was spraying them with his territory."
Jesus.
I'm like, that's not something that they should probably warn you about that. Or like, you know, you go into an Alice Cooper show and put the rain jacket on or something along those lines.
That sounds like me New Year's Eve. Just like 5, 4, all over everybody.
We go everywhere.
Dude, that's a mental note about the hippos.
You stay away from the hippos.
The more you know.
Yeah, the more you know. We're talking about all the different things you've mentioned before, working for Comedy Central and working for Grandma's Boy and doing the Netflix thing. We've mentioned Netflix. The big thing now that you're doing, and you've done two of them now, is the Adam Sandler movies that are specifically for Netflix.
Yeah.
And you're in with that crew. It's because actually Vanilla Ice has been on this show, and he's in with the Sandler crew now,
too.
Oh,
yeah. Rob's our boy, dude.
He's a great guy.
He's awesome. He's like one of the coolest dudes ever.
Totally. But once you get, it's like a modern day kind of Brat Pack thing. When you get in with that gang, you're in everything that Adam does.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with that crew?
Yeah, Adam's insanely loyal, and he's a really good dude. So like the people that like work with him and hang with him like are like really good people. Like I've seen other people like work with Adam and they'll have egos or they'll be dicks.
Mm-hmm.
And then Adam will be like, "Yeah, that guy's never like coming around again."
Really?
Yeah. Like he's like really like, you know, he's just such a regular, like, chill dude. Like, there's no, like, Hollywood pretense, like, with any of us, you know what I mean? Like, we're all just, like, we know we're f***ing idiots, you know what I mean? So it's, like, it's not, like, I was just telling Stacey, who brought me up.
Yeah,
she's like, "Where'd you park?" I'm like, I just Ubered. And she's like, "Why, you didn't drive?" And I don't have a car. She's like, "What, really?" I'm like, "Yeah, I just don't want one. I don't need it. I'm not one of those people that's like, I need like a purple Lambo with a chandelier."
Right.
So anyway, long story short. So I met Sandler from Comedy Central. My first Comedy Central special was 2002.
Like your own stand-up special?
Yeah, it was my first special. 2002, I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. Or no, God. I think it was like 2000 or 99 even.
Okay.
Anyway, blah, blah. So I get a call from my manager. He goes, Adam Sandler wants to meet you. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah. He goes, he saw your special on Comedy Central and he wants to meet you. So I went in and met with him.
And that's a pretty cool call to get, by the way.
Well, yeah, it was kind of like, why? I couldn't really put my head around it.
Yeah.
So I went and sat down with him, and he was like, yeah. He goes, I was in bed with my wife, and we were watching TV, just channel surfing. And I came across Comedy Central, and I saw this kid, and he was talking about his grandma. And it's like, we started laughing. It was really funny. And
what was the bit that he saw? Like, what was your bit that
you were telling? It was like one of my first big – I just used to talk about my grandma and how – when I would hang out with her, like when you hang out with old people, you're like the strongest person in the world. Like if they need help with anything, you know, my grandma would be like, this gallon of milk is so heavy. And I'd be like, what, this gallon? And I would like raise it over my head. And she'd be like, oh my God, how did you do that? So he was like, we have this movie called Grandma's Boy. And it's PG-13, and we need somebody to rewrite it. And he's like, your grandma jokes, I just thought, you know, you'd be good for it. But he's like, we want to make it rated R and crazy. So I was like, all right. So that was my first thing. I rewrote it, and they loved it. And then that was it.
And what a perfect example of just completely right place at right time. He's got a grandma movie that he wants to punch up and rewrite, and he turns on a show where a kid's talking about his grandma.
Yeah, no, it was like the most serendipitous thing like on the
good word.
Fucking planet.
Yeah. I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it was cool. But then, and then he just kept trusting me with more and more stuff and started making me a producer. And we became, I mean, he's one of my best friends now. I just did a show with him 2 nights ago. And we're on tour right now. We're doing some dates. I can't do most of them.
Stand-up tour?
Yeah, Adam's doing like music and shit.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, it just snowballed from there. And I've done... You know, the Netflix gig is amazing. Netflix has been awesome. They've given Adam and myself and everybody complete creative freedom. And
yeah, let's talk about that because I mean, that's kind of the way of the world now because Rob was telling me that he was Mark Twain.
He's fucking hilarious. He's so funny. Yeah. It was one of my favorite moments. I like, oh my God. Rob is Mark Twain. It was genius.
Yeah, and Rob meaning Vanilla Ice. So just for the uninitiated. But I had no idea what the movie was, and then I saw it on Netflix. And, of course, still thinking from 15 years ago, you're like, that's a Netflix movie? Why wouldn't that just go to the theaters? But then I did some digging because I'm a true journalist.
Right.
And I found out, you know, they paid Adam, you know, tens of millions of dollars to make exclusive movies just for Netflix.
Yeah.
So is it the same concept as going on set if it was a Paramount movie or whatever?
Well, I mean, Netflix looked up I don't know how they did it, through their mystery machine. I don't know how anything works. I can't even turn on my TV.
You don't even have a car.
I don't have a car. But Adam was the most searched guy on Netflix. So his movies, so that's how the deal started.
Oh.
Is that they were like, they came to him and they were like, look, you're the number one person that people, you know, watch the movies and shit. So he was like, okay, cool. But yeah, no, like they're like literally, I'm not kissing their ass. I mean, I am, but it's very genuine. Like they literally just gave us complete control. I mean, and they were, you know, Adam's like, I want to do this movie. They're like, all right, great. You know, and like usually like with studios, I mean, Netflix is so, the people that work there, you know, they're just killing it. They're kicking ass. And like a lot of studio people, like everyone's like paranoid about their jobs at studios. So it's like that's one frustrating thing about the industry, TV and film, is that people will give you notes just kind of out of fear. So like they'll read a script and they'll try to kind of justify what they do. So they'll be like, oh, you know what? I don't think we need this. You know, this second act, I don't think it makes sense. And it's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
It makes perfect sense. And they're like, nah, maybe cut this joke. And just because they feel like they have to, you know what I mean?
To justify their position.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like, it's just so insane. I've had the craziest conversations throughout the years with executives where I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And I've seen Adam in rooms with executives where I'm like, are you really telling Adam Sandler, like,
right,
what that you're cutting out, like, this scene that's hilarious? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
right.
So it's always really surreal to me. And that's why I always loved, and I still do, and always love doing stand-up comedy, because I have complete autonomy. You know what I mean? Like, I can say, and it was a solid word. I'm actually smarter than people think.
That's not bad.
But, you know, I can say and do whatever I want. Nobody can tell me what to you mm-hmm. on stage, you know what I mean? I'll kill you.
With my comedy.
With my diarrhea. I will mark my territory.
Just like a hippo.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of the way that entertainment is going, to where it is basically going down to more power just to the artist. I mean, you're talking about Adam gets to do what he wants on Netflix. You're talking about your stand-up. Even for me on this show, I can have whoever I think is cool or whoever would be interesting on, and no one can tell me yes, no, whatever.
Right.
You know, and I think that's important because studios do want to get involved and do try and taint everything just because that's what they do.
Taint, good word.
Yeah, taint. The double entendre.
Yeah.
But I mean, the power is going back to the actual artist.
Yeah, no, which is – it's great. It's so refreshing. And then – people can't obviously see me right now, but I have a mustache and I have a mullet.
It's greasy too. Oh yeah, the mullet's there. Nice.
Yeah.
And it's just real. Like it's
grimy.
Haven't washed your hair for a couple of days.
I haven't washed my hair for 2 days,
which I love.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Well, I mean, you're actually not supposed to wash your hair every day. You know
right. It's bad for your.
It dries out your scalp.
Yeah, for the shininess of the hair and all that sort of stuff. Shit. You know,
but I'm growing this out. I'm pitching Netflix a show next week, so that's why I look like...
Oh, so there's a reason why you have the mullet. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, me and the director of Grandma's Boy and Sandler are going in with a TV show that's like Sons of Anarchy meets Roadhouse, and then it's like kind of like the tone of like Eastbound and Down, like comedy-wise.
Oh, that's great.
It's pretty awesome, so...
You got a little bit of a Danny McBride type of a vibe.
Oh, yeah. Danny is a good friend, too.
He's another one in the gang, right? Kind of.
Yeah, Danny hasn't worked with Adam yet. I keep trying to find stuff for him. Like, Adam just... knows so many people, so it's like so hard. Like when somebody comes along, it's like so rare because Adam just
everybody wants to work with Adam Sandler.
Yeah, you know, and it's like Adam just, you know, he calls his boys first. You know what I mean? Like my agents, I don't even know. They just did it. You know, Adam just calls my cell phone.
Yeah.
Like, did you ever see the movie Just Go With It?
No.
With Jennifer Aniston, Sandler, myself.
Oh no.
Brooklyn Decker.
No.
Oh, you should check it out. It's one of my favorite movies. One of my favorite roles.
What was the concept of the movie? I don't know why I hadn't seen this. Jennifer Aniston.
It was a big movie, like on Valentine's Day. Like, God, I'm gonna say it came out maybe 5 years ago.
Okay.
And oh my God, I'm trying to think of the concept. It was
a hilarious concept. Very funny stuff.
Sandler worked with Jennifer Aniston at like a doctor's office. Mm-hmm. Adam was a doctor, and she was his assistant. And he needed her to play his fake wife.
Oh, yeah. Just go with it. Right.
Yeah, and he was trying to pick Brooklyn Decker and blah, blah.
Yeah.
But anyway, my character, I played a guy. I'm trying to remember my character. Good Lord.
It's a great piece of work, if you see it.
I played a dude, anyway. I played a guy, and then I played myself, like a regular guy, and then I played, I created this German guy. And so like half the movie I was like this kind of like did like a German character, and I remember the point being of this story is that Adam called me and I was like out to dinner and he's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm eating." "What are you doing?" He goes, "Can you do like any kind of German accent?" And I was like, "Yes, you know, I go to the bar and something." How's this? And I just did the same. He goes, "Okay, cool." And I was like, all right, that was weird. So hung up the phone.
That's the one rule of Hollywood. If someone asks if you can do something, the answer is always yes.
Yeah, yeah,
can you
for sure.
Parachute off the Empire State Building? Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Duh.
Yeah. So then 2 days later, he's like, yeah, we're doing this movie with Jennifer Aniston in Hawaii, and you're one of the leads, and you play this German dude. I was like, all right. But it was literally...
That's great, though,
it was
right?
Literally a one-minute, literally a cold phone call, just, hey, what's up? What are you doing? Eating. What are you doing? Nothing. Can you do a German accent? You thought it does? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then that's how I booked
of
it.
Of course, like, I can't, Adam.
but that's how I booked this huge role.
But that's, to me, the real problem with Hollywood. And it's just the way it is. I get it. Have my publicist, call your publicist, have my agent publicist. For example, this meeting, this amazing, riveting conversation we're having right now was two guys texting each other 5-6 times. We're in a room together. You get a good vibe. You know it's going to be fun because we both know Nick, whatever it is. There's other people here, like William Shatner. He's been on the show twice with two emails. Hey, dude, what's up? Hey, dude, what's up? And then there's other people. It's like, well, call my publicist. Well, he's not available. She's like, just get on the phone and, hey, dude, can you do it? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Yes or no. That's all you need.
Yeah.
It's cool that you have that relationship to be doing that.
I mean, I do with, like, everything. I mean, usually it's like, yeah, just, like, hit me. I mean, people will be like, you know, what channels do I need to go through? I'm just like, just text me.
That's right. Yeah. It's just easier.
It's easier, and it's, you know, like, I've had moments where people will be like, dude, I can't believe you didn't do my movie. And I was like, what movie? And they're like, yeah, I called your agent. And I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, they passed on it. And I'm like, they didn't tell me. And I would call my old agents at the time. I'm like, did they call you about this movie? And they're like, yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, at least give me the option of it. You know what I mean?
Let me see if I like it or not, you know? I'm going to take a stab here. Are you wearing a Minnesota State necklace?
Yeah.
Dude. Okay, well, first of all, my wife's from Minnesota.
Oh, what part do you know?
Northern Minnesota, Hibbing.
Oh,
Hibbing
and Chisholm. Bob Dylan.
Yeah, exactly, Bob Dylan. I'm from Winnipeg, which is, you know, 5 hours north.
Right.
There's something to be said about growing up in the north. It's more, I'm not going to say people are just people there, but there's a different attitude. It's like being a Canadian is like that. Like, let's throw away the bullshit. What's up? How you doing?
Right.
Do you have that vibe from growing up in Minneapolis?
Yeah, I love Minnesota. I love the Midwest.
It's a diamond encrusted Minnesota.
It's a custom made diamond Minnesota necklace.
Yeah, I'm so laid back from Minnesota with my diamond encrusted state.
And then I have the area code tattooed on my wrist. That was a birthday present from
612, unless you're looking at the other way, in which case
I know it's kind of
219.
But it's 612.
So either way.
Yeah, no. Well, I said this. So the Vikings, I'm a diehard Minnesota Vikings fan.
So is my wife.
So the kicker, Blair Walsh, misses a 27-yard field goal to win the game and go to the playoffs. I mean, go further into the playoffs.
Right.
So, you know, there was a backlash for a second, but then I went on social media and everybody was like, you know what, Blair? You're going to be fine. You know, you did your best. And blah, and there was just all this, like, just deluge of love and outpouring of, like, support. And everybody rallied around him. And that's, like, kind of, like, what Minnesota is. I'm like, if that were any other team.
Right.
He would have to get into, like, Batman's car and, like, drive to Canada.
Yeah.
And, like,
if that was Detroit, he wouldn't have made it out of the stadium.
If it was Philly or something, like, oh, my God. Yeah,
he'd be stabbed by the time
Armageddon.
He even left. Right, yeah.
So that, to me, just kind of sums up where people are like, oh, you know what? He did his best.
Yeah. Know? He tried. Now, but, come on now.
You know he did. You saw him try.
Just make him some supper and it's okay. Right? Yeah, that's another word, supper. Supper is dinner. Actually, dinner is lunch and supper is dinner, I think.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Did you was there a big culture shock when you came from Minnesota to LA?
I didn't. I got the best piece of advice I got doing comedy, because this is another thing about Minnesota, is that when I was starting stand-up, people were like, oh, dude, that's like the hardest thing in the world, doing stand-up. You know, they're like, God, did you like bomb? Like, did you have horrible stories? And I was like, no. Like, I never bombed in Minnesota. Because people are so polite that they're like, even if it's not good, they're like, you know what? I'm going to clap anyway.
He's trying.
That's hard as F to get up there and do that. So I didn't bomb. My first time on stage, I just killed. So like it was like years of like doing great. And then the best piece of advice I got is somebody said, don't move to LA right away.
Mm.
They said, make LA your final destination. Like, make sure that you're, you know, you have at least an hour of material. You have your head straight. You know what I mean? You know what the f*** you're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
Because once the industry sees you and you get it, like, into that world, that's, you know, if you're not ready, then they're like, oh, he's too green. This guy's not ready, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I moved to New York first. So then I moved to New York and spent a couple years there. And I bombed there. Let me just say, I had some shows that were, I mean, I got booed off stage. I mean,
What kind of, like, well, first of all, I have to ask, do you remember where your first show was?
My first show was at Caroline's on Broadway. It was a Monday night.
No, I'm talking about in Minnesota. Your very first show.
The Acme Comedy Company.
In the Twin Cities?
Yeah, it's still there. What's one of the best clubs in the country?
Oh, that's killer.
It's sick.
That's
so
killer.
So I did an open mic night. I still have my sign-up sheet. I kept it. I was like, I'm going to keep this just in case.
Yeah.
But it's like, I got 3 minutes and, like, it's, I don't know.
What was
so
the
weird
big joke? Do you remember?
My big joke was I used to do an impression of a cat vomiting. And that was like my
Gold. People love cats, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People love vomit.
So you go to Caroline's on Broadway. Did you use the vomiting cat?
Yeah, that show went well because they would tape. So back then you would get a VHS tape.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a currency back then. So
you
like,
get a tape of your show?
Yeah. So once you got a tape, like that was, you know, your managers and agents and stuff would, you know, that, I mean, that was your calling card. So it was like everybody wanted to have like a really good tape. Like that was like a huge deal.
Yeah.
And Caroline's is a big club on Broadway. So
sure. It's
it was
one of the biggest ones there.
Yeah. So it was, you know, to get a tape set from Caroline's gave you like a lot of street cred too. Cause they're like, mm-hmm. Oh, Caroline's, like, you know, it's not like Uncle Dick's fuck suck hut and Iowa or whatever.
Shout out to Uncle Dick's.
Much loved Uncle Dick Suck.
I think we should open a comedy club called that and just see if anyone shows up.
Ever. Everyone's going to show up. Yeah. It's going to be mayhem. But so I cut my teeth in New York and then moved to LA when I, you know, when I was ready.
So when you're doing the stand-up and you said you're getting booed off stage, I mean, are they literally booing you?
I got booed. I literally got booed off.
Like,
I
mean, because everything you're saying is so bad, they're like, boo!
Well, it was...
Or did you insult somebody?
It was a Def Jam room. So
you're the wrong color.
But it was just like, when you're like a white kid from Minnesota who... And my act was super clean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, all these other comics, didn't matter if you're white or black or Asian, but, like, the New York comics had so much more edge, you know what I
mean?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So I was talking about cats and shit.
Cats
and
vomiting.
And the crowd's like, what is this? Like, boo. like all these other guys, you know, are just talking like the craziest shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I came up with, good Lord. I mean, I started with Zach Galifianakis, Jim Gaffigan. I mean, so many people back in the day. I mean, Mike Epps, like all these guys. So funny.
So they're going on like the same... places you're going on, I mean, clubs.
When you're starting out, you just get whatever you can.
Mm-hmm.
Stage time is so valuable, you know what I mean? So it's like no matter what the gig, whether it was a coffee house, a restaurant, Def Jam, like anything, it was just mm-hmm. like you just had to get on stage.
You get 10 minutes wherever, and that's gold.
Yeah, you're fucking gold. And you know, if you're lucky, you can get like 30 minutes, like in Brooklyn, where I almost got killed, but.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I remember, like, yeah, but, like, I think on the same show I got booed off, Tracy Morgan went on and talked about, like, eating chicks' assholes for, like, 20 minutes. I remember I was in the back of the club and I was like, what the f*** is happening right now? And he was like, you know, you eat the booty and just get up in the... And I was just like, I cannot follow this. Like, there's nothing I could say that could, like...
Right. My knock-knock jokes are not going to work tonight.
Yeah, no. It was... But, yeah, it was gnarly. And I had to follow Chris Rock and Dave Attell and all these guys. It just, oh, it sucked.
And the rule is, like, if you have 30 minutes, you have to hit that 30 right on time. If you go 2 minutes over, 3 minutes over, that comes out of the next guy's bit.
It depends on... It depends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every club's different, but I mean, usually, like, just out of respect, you stick to your time.
Right.
Just because, you know, every comic, we all know each other, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So, and that was a cool thing about, like, certain comics, like, I won't name names, but, like, some comics would, like, drop into the comedy club and do, like, 2 hours.
Right, right, right.
Like, famous comics.
We had the Scloras on, Dice did that one time, and just totally, like, took an hour and a half and just... terrible, just killing everybody else's stuff. And
that's I mean, there's guys that will come on and they'll do like 2 hours of like nothing, mm-hmm. like where they're just like bored, you know what I mean?
So
like
what's
on
up
stage.
Today? Yeah.
And then I remember like Seinfeld used to come into the Comedy Cellar in New York and he would literally be like, hey, is it cool if I jump on? I'm just going to do like 10 minutes. And everybody was like, yeah, obviously, you have to do it. You know, like,
yeah.
You're like, do whatever you want. But he would do like 10 minutes and get off.
Yeah.
He would practice new shit. And then he would get right off. You know what I mean? I always just thought that was really cool.
It's very respectful to the
whole brethren. It's insanely respectful. You know what I mean? It's like, you're just f***ing over, like, when you're coming up. Like, I can do that now if I want. I can show up at any comedy club, you know, and do an hour, whatever. You know what I mean? But it's like, I would never do that out of respect to the comics that are trying to come up and trying to need the stage time. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you know, I don't need it. I'm... Michael Jordan to comedy, bro. Get out of here with this shit.
As he takes a drink, defiantly takes a drink. When you talk about starting to work with Sandler, was there a different level of professionalism as because I mean he directs, he produces, it's kind of his thing, or is it just wide open, dude, whatever you want to do? Like, what's kind of the regimen that you have to go through when you work?
Here's the deal with Sandler, and this is probably the biggest misconception, and this is what I get a lot. People go like, dude, you and Sandler, man, like, when you're writing a movie, like, how high are you? Like, do you just get, like, shit-faced and, like, baked and, like, rip-cooked?
Right.
And I'm like, no. Like, what?
Yeah.
That's the exact opposite. You know what I mean? Like, on set and everything, like, I'm notorious for being, like, you know, I drink and party and shit, but, like, I don't do drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when I'm filming, I don't have a drink, like, for 3 months. Like,
you don't have time for it, yeah.
No. I mean, like, Adam... So my point being, like, the biggest misconception is, like, oh, Adam's just, you know, like, frat guy, idiot, whatever. But he's not. He's, like, smart as shit and, like, works his ass off. Like, he does everything on the set. I mean, like, he co-directs, he stars, he, you know, produces, he casts the movie. I mean, he does everything. He goes, does the music. He, I mean, like, he, every facet of that production, you know, Adam's involved in. I mean, it's crazy. And then at the same time, he's running Happy Madison. So he's going over his next two movies and going over, you know, whatever shit, like, if I have an idea, you know, like this TV show, he's like, yeah, send me the script, I'll, you know, check it out, and you know what I mean? So, like...
So that goes through his banner of Happy Madison, the show that you're working on. For the
it goes through Happy Madison, and hopefully through Netflix.
Okay, gotcha, right.
But yeah, Adam and Happy Madison.
But you've got his... power behind you as you go into the room.
Yeah, he loves it. He read the pilot script and was like, this is great, dude. He's like, I love it. So, and he would say it if, you know, if he was like, no, this is dumb, dude.
Right, 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 right. So when you're going to try and pitch that sort of stuff, do you get a lot of stuff that gets turned down that you know is good?
Yeah, that's really frustrating. I've had a couple of pilots. One of my favorite ones that me and Danny McBride were developing was called Bro Sassin. And it was a kid that was grew up, I think, in like the jungle somewhere. I can't remember where it was. And he was raised by an assassin. His dad was an assassin that retired.
Right.
But he had to leave because he got into some beef. So he left and like raised his kid like in the jungle to hide out. And then he felt guilty. So they moved back to L.A. And he sends me to college. And then, like, I, like, love it. Like, I become, like, the ultimate frat guy. Like, I finally have interaction with, like, bros and, like, you know. And so after I graduate, I stay at the frat house. And I live, like, in the top, like the cellar. I mean, not the cellar, the attic.
House, attic.
Whatever.
Right.
But, and I'm still, like the head of the frat fraternity, but I'm also an assassin. So I moonlight as an assassin while living in a frat house. And it is stupid.
Yeah.
But it was really funny and we loved it. And yeah, just Comedy Central bought it and they just never made it.
I hate when that sort of stuff happens, man. You know, I did a pilot years ago now for the USA Network, and it was called E-Bombs World. It was this website at the time that had all of these videos. Like,
I remember E-Bombs World.
E-Bombs World. They were going to make a show of that. And the big thing of the show was there was a guy there who had tried to drink a gallon of milk, because apparently your human stomach doesn't allow you to drink a gallon of milk.
Right.
And so he failed miserably, and I was like, my bit on the show as the host was like, I can do this. I said, I can do it. They're like, no, you can't. I'm telling you, I can drink milk. So I drank the whole gallon of milk. Dude, I drank it.
Oh, my God.
The first half, you're like, and then the last half, it's like eating, like, you know, pure. I drank the whole gallon of milk, and I was like, I'm the champion. I'm the champion. Then it was like if I had a full balloon and went like this, and the water would spit out. It was like, I'm the champion. And boom, this gout of milk just shot across the room. I was like, whoa! And then I turned around and whoop! I had no control. The milk was everywhere.
God.
And I was
like,
this is brilliant TV. And it did not get picked up. Damn, Bonnie Hammer didn't like it.
What?
Come on, drinking a whole gallon of milk? What more do you want?
And yeah, and then vomiting it back up.
You know?
Marking your territory. I know, it's frustrating. I mean, a lot of that stuff, like, I want to, like, release just so people, you know, because I was all excited. I caught myself about it. I was like, oh, it's going to get me.
Right.
And then, I was on social media, like, I sold the show. And then people were just like, what happened to the show? What happened to
your show? Yeah, your show.
Yeah, we sold the show to FX. Me and the director of Grandma's Boy, that was... it was a workplace video game comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny McBride was producing it. And sold it to FX, and then they, you know, we wrote the script. It was hilarious. It was called Game On, mm-hmm. and passed on it. We were just like, fuck.
What was the one they did, the Bucky Larson?
Yeah, Bucky.
And that was actually a theatrical movie.
Yeah.
And you're the lead.
Yeah.
So what's that like?
That was, I mean, I stand by that movie. People shit on it. It's one of those movies where it was just a softball for haters. It was mm-hmm. literally like the easiest, most hateable movie. But me and Sandler wrote it. It was his idea. I love it.
And it's a child star that grows up to be a porn star?
It's a kid in Iowa who finds out his parents used to be porn stars.
Okay.
And they're like, sweet, like, how are ya? And he finds a box of porn, and it's his parents. So he was like, no, this is my calling, even though he's a virgin. And he goes, and he's got buck teeth. He looks
the goofy hair.
Yeah, he's like Prince a bowl cut and shit. Yeah, Prince Valiant. So he goes to make it in Hollywood as a porn star. He's got like some connections and stuff, but... I mean, it got a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I mean, how is it even possible?
I don't even know if that's possible.
Like, how you get zero? Like,
Matt,
everybody said zero.
Like, yeah, and they just hate, you know, the worst movie ever made. It's like Stephen Dorff, Christina Ricci, myself, Don Johnson, Nick Turturro, Kevin Nealon. Like, these are good actors.
High-class actors, yeah.
Yeah, like,
right.
We did the table read with Kurt Russell.
Really?
Yeah, he read Don Johnson's part for the table read because Don wasn't available, and so Kurt Russell did it.
So how
and Kurt was laughing the entire time. He's like, oh my God. He goes, this is one of the funniest things I've ever f-ing read. And now when I run into Kurt, every once in a while, he's like, Bucky! Like, he's, you know, like,
I love you.
The people that get that movie, I always.
But like, how does that work, though? So why would Kurt Russell come in? Was he just bored one night or someone called him up? Or?
He's friends with Adam. Adam's like, hey, can you do us a solid? Do our table read. Because they're neighbors. They live across the street
okay.
from each other.
So the table read is like, this is actually, you're reading it out in character with the beats and everything like that to try and see if it's going to pop?
You're literally sitting around a table.
Right.
With the cast.
Reading.
Yeah. And you just sit there with the script in front of you. And you hear it out loud just to get the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And people to, like, work on their characters. And then, you know, the studio execs are there. So they'll have notes. And then usually with comedies, you'll have writers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, you'll have, like, 5 writers to do punch-up. So they'll, like, afterwards you sit down with the writers and they're like, hey, wait, I thought it'd be funny if, like, what if this, and, like, what about this?
Okay.
And they'll pitch jokes and just to punch it up.
Right, right, right. So, but as a young comedian and basically your first, like, it's Nick Swardson is, you know, Bucky Larson. So is this something where you're, like, looking at the box office receipts, like, after the first night and just, like, was your career hanging in the balance or was it just don't worry about it?
I mean, I knew it was going to take. I mean, I thought it might do okay, but like...
Because there are movies like that that do decent business.
Yeah, but it was like, it was a character that nobody knew. It wasn't pre-existing. Mm-hmm. And it's such a weird movie because it was a hard R. We almost had NC-17. So, you know, it was just one of those things where we couldn't... Like the TV ads... all had to be PG.
Right.
So people are watching the ads like, oh, this movie looks like, this looks boring.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't get it.
Don't get to see the meat of it.
Yeah. So then nobody really knew what it was. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? I mean, we had like a Red Band trailer, but, you know, that just didn't go as viral as we had hoped.
Yeah.
And stuff. But yeah, no, I mean, that movie's amazing. But yeah, I got nominated for 5 Razzies that year. I get nominated every year if I have a movie, so it's pretty awesome.
What other Razzie nominations did you get?
Oh, God, I've gotten probably have 12 or 13. And my favorite thing is I always lose to Sandler.
Oh, okay.
So it's always, like, really funny.
You should show up at those one year. Is there actually
an award ceremony, yeah.
Oh, that'd be great if you just showed up and embraced it.
If I won, I would show up. Sandra Bullock did that.
Oh, yeah, she did.
I always thought that was really cool. Yeah, she did, and she showed up and handed out copies of her movie to everyone. But,
I did MacGruber a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking love MacGruber.
Same thing, though. I mean, there was Val Kilmer's in it, and Kristen Wiig, and, of course, Will, and everybody's in there.
Philippi.
Yeah, Philippi. And it was the first movie I've ever been in that was in the theater. So I went to see the theater and see myself on screen, which is always kind of a cool
thing.
And then it did like, you know, 3.8 million opening weekend and it was gone the next week. So it was just like, wah, 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 wah. But in retrospect, it's become almost like a cult favorite.
Oh, it for sure has.
You know, has Bucky had the same effect afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, definitely people like, when, you know, I'll post Instagram photos like, throwbacks, and people are like, oh, I love that movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I remember I had a conversation with Danny and Andy Samberg, and this is a couple years ago, and we were talking about, and Forte, and we were talking about how we should just have like a club, because like Andy did Hot Rod, bombed.
That's right, yeah.
Danny did Your Highness, bombed. I did Bucky and Grandma's Boy, both bombed. Forte did MacGruber, bombed. So you're just talking about like this club where it's just like our movies that just tank, and it's just like we'll just hold down the fort.
Yeah,
when hold down the basement.
I've written a couple books, and then for the second book, I was talking about when I first came out to Hollywood. You know, studied acting, and then you go on auditions, which I'm terrible at.
Auditioning sucks.
Oh, it's the worst. So I actually went back and remembered all the movies that I auditioned for that didn't get,
right,
and then added up the box office for all of them. And it was like almost $1 billion of movies that I didn't get. So I'm like the anti Samuel L. Jackson.
Really?
I'm the worst box office draw in history.
Wow. Well, I'm not too far behind.
Yeah. Well, you and me, man, you and me.
But I remember one time I was at some premiere, and I'm buddies with Paul Rudd. I've known Paul Rudd for years.
Yeah.
And but I hadn't seen him in a long time, and he came up to me, and he just goes, "Dude, Bucky Larson is unreal." He goes, "Me and my wife have watched it like 5 times. He's like, "Your performance was so great." He goes, "I really felt for your character." Like, but he was like so nice. But it was like made me feel so much better that like one of my peers,
right,
was like, you know what I mean, like, wasn't like somebody just, it was like Paul was like, no, he dissected it like for me. He's like, no, that one scene, he's like, you really, I was like, finally somebody from,
he gets it.
Yeah, somebody watched it was like, oh yeah.
The only time I ever went to SNL, actually Will brought me there just to watch it and check it out, and there was, you go to the after party across the street, and it was Halloween. So John Mayer's there, and he's wearing a stormtrooper outfit, and he's got the helmet in his hand, and he comes over to me. He starts talking like this weird speech.
Right.
And I'm listening to him, and I'm like, wait a second, this is my soliloquy from MacGruber. And he has it all memorized from beginning to end.
Really?
He goes, MacGruber, greatest film of all time. Same thing. Starts going into how it affected, you know, the Aborigines in the Australian outback, and it relates to the society. And I'm like, man, you got a lot more out of that movie than I did.
That's awesome.
But yeah,
he's a big comedy fan.
Yeah, obviously,
yeah. Yeah, he's like a big like junkie for comedy. But yeah, it is funny. Yeah, MacGruber is so good, man. I saw it in the theater. I remember I was like, you know, people say this to me, and they're like, yeah, I saw Bucky in the theater. I was the only one there.
It was
like,
awesome.
I'm like, okay. Yeah, MacGruber, I remember there was like probably 15 people at the Grove.
Yeah, well, there you go.
But I was laughing my ass off.
Well, you know, like you said, it's one of those ones that at the time, you know, if you get it, you get it. Maybe in the back end you can, you know, kind of pick up more on it then.
Yeah, well, this is a funny story about Ryan Phillippe. And this goes back to agents and stuff. So I'd met Ryan at a party years ago, and I did a character called Gay Robot.
Oh, my gosh, that's you?
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
That's good me. Times.
What's up? Yeah, what's up? Hey, guys. Yeah, that's me. I created it.
Dude, I love that. I always thought that was Sandler.
No, it's
that's
me.
You?
Yeah.
Oh, you got it. Good. Hey, guys.
Hey, guys. What's up? Taste it. So, I have my sketch show on Comedy Central, and Gay Robot made an appearance on it. So there was a robot that was built for a pilot that didn't go. We had a TV show called
Gay Robot.
There's
gonna be a Gay Robot show? Like
there was. Comedy Central bought it, and then they turned it down.
What is it with these Comedy Central
guys?
I
don't know. It's
wasting
so
all this money on Swartzen.
I know. God. So anyway, we had a robot that was built.
Oh, so it was actually going to be a live action?
It was a live action.
Oh, my gosh.
It was epic. So, I mean, you can probably find clips on YouTube. But anyway, so I'm at a party with
Philippe.
Yeah, I ran to Ryan Phillippe. And he comes over and he's like, hey, I'm Ryan. I'm like, hey, I'm Nick. And he goes, dude, Gay Robot is my favorite thing in the face of the earth. He had heard the sketch on Sandler's album.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm just obsessed. He goes, it's so great. And so I was like, oh, thanks, man. Like, it's so random. And then so years later, I get my sketch show and I have a Gay Robot, a couple sketches. So I write one for Gay Robot and Ryan Phillippe.
Oh, that's great.
Where Gay Robot plays a bouncer at a bar, and Ryan Phillippe shows up, and, you know, Gay Robot falls in love with him. And so I write it for Ryan, and I'm like, I don't have his information. So I call my agent. I'm like, where is Ryan represented? They're like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, can I have his agent's number? So I call his agent. I'm like, hey, it's Nick Swartzen. And the guy's like, yeah, what's up, man? I go, I have a sketch show. I have a sketch I wrote for Ryan with him and this character, Gay Robot.
What was the show called?
My show?
Yeah.
It was called Nick Swartzen's Pretend Time.
Okay.
So the agent goes, Ryan's really busy right now. And I go, well, can you just ask him? And he was like, yeah, I mean, it's just really tricky. This is not really a good time. And I'm like, just trust me. Just ask him. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he was like, okay, you know what I mean? Let me get your number. But, you know, like, he's, you know, it's not going to, you know, this is a long shot. I'm like, okay. 5 minutes later, the agent calls me back. He goes, yep, Ryan's in. You know what I mean?
Because once again, you knew exactly.
I knew, right. But literally 5 minutes later, the guy's like, yeah. Ryan said he's in 100%.
Didn't even care what the script is.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So like, he gives me Ryan's info, and I send him the script, and Ryan showed up on time and was like super excited, like loved it, and like had a blast and shit.
Where did that come from? Like, because that was actually, you said that was on an Adam Sandler comedy album.
It was on Sandler's last album.
Yeah. Whatever Happened to Me or something like that?
No, it's called Shh, Don't Tell.
Oh, okay.
And so this is, again, when I just started working with Adam. And he was like, hey, I'm doing another comedy album. And I'm like, really? And he goes, yeah, if you have any ideas, any sketches or anything for it, you know, just let me know. And I'm like, okay. So I would do that voice, like, around the office at Happy Madison. So I'd be like, hey, Adam, sweet shorts. And like, hey, that's a sweet shirt. Adam, you look really good today. And I would always do it. He would always laugh. He'd always crack up. And I realized, like, as for an audio sketch, I'm like, oh, that voice is really funny. Like, what would it be? And I was like, it sounds like a gay robot. And so I just wrote this sketch, and I gave it to Adam. And he's like, oh, yeah, we're for sure doing this. So then, yeah, then we've tried to spin it into a show. Then we did an animated show with Comedy Central, and they passed on that. Then I put on my sketch show, and then
maybe it's just you. Maybe Comedy Central just doesn't like you.
I know. I think they secretly hate me for some reason, even though I've done like all my specials for them, stayed completely loyal. Every other comic's gone to like Netflix and other places for their specials.
I just love the fact that there's still a chance for Gay Robot.
I mean,
like, that must have been at least 8 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah, over 10 years, there's been a million incarnations of this robot.
Who were your favorite comedians that you kind of got into when you were starting out?
I mean, I was just a big SNL dude,
mm-hmm.
which is surreal for me because my high school was Sandler, Spade, Farley, Schneider,
classic
all those guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's, you know, it's kind of bizarre to like...
Are you working with them all now?
These guys, but they're like my best friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not even like, I did a movie with them. It's like, no, I hang out. Like, these guys are like my family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, it is surreal. But like, yeah, I mean, that to me was just... I mean, those years on SNL were insane.
Possibly the best cast.
I think that's the best cast of all time. And it's kind of sacrilegious. People are like, oh, how could you say that? But I mean... When you look
in comparison to who, though? Like, how can you say that in comparison to what other cast?
Well, because everyone says, you know, the original cast.
Yeah, but that's not... I don't think that's the funniest cast.
No, I mean... And they're brilliant.
Sure they are.
But, I mean, I just thought, like, those... Like, early 90s... It was insane. You had a cast that had Sandler, Spade, Schneider, Farley, Mike Myers, Phil Hartman...
Carvey.
Kevin Nealon, Dana Carvey, Chris Rock... Sarah Silverman was like a feature.
Yeah, she wasn't you had to do anything.
You know, Jay Moore was on it. Fucking Ellen mm-hmm. Cleghorn. I mean, Tim Meadows. I mean, it was like
all those
insane.
People had careers. Yeah.
I mean, like they're all like.
And then even kind of bleeding over to when Ferrell came in and Kristen Wiig and those type of people for about a good 8-9 year period. It was just like so many giants came from that time.
Yeah, it was insane. And mm-hmm. one of my best friends, one of my oldest friends, Fred Armisen.
Okay, yeah,
brilliant.
Great too.
Yeah, I got him his first agent.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was just pretty funny.
Out here?
Yeah, I saw him do a show. He did a character, and I was like, dude, it's so funny, man. I'm like, do you have that on tape? VHS tape, of course. He's like, yeah. I go, do you have an agent? I'm like, and he's like, no. And I'm like, oh, I'll take you to my agency. I was with ICM at the time, and I got him signed with ICM. And
the rest is history.
And the rest is history. Yeah,
my little Fred is all grown up.
He knew.
Did you ever try and audition for SNL?
There was a window when I first moved to New York, but I was like 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So my agent had talked to them, and they were like, nah, he's too young. Like, 20 is just like, you know, this is back when the cast was like way older.
Right.
So they were like, nah, he's too young, whatever. And then later on, I moved to LA. And then when I started working with Sandler, he was like, you should do SNL. He's like, I can call for you, Spade. Rock will call on your behalf.
Call Lauren, you mean?
Yeah, call Lauren. And I was like, I guess that'd be cool. And then he was like, wait, no, that. He's like, just work with me. He's like, what? It's like, what am I talking about? He's like, you're already like going to be in movies and producing movies. Like,
right.
You know, like, why go back to New York and then start, you know, kind of from scratch?
6 days a week, 7 days a week.
Yeah. He's like, schedule, no. Right. Like, he's like, you're already like doing shit. So
what do you have coming up with, Adam? You have more projects under?
Yeah. We have a movie coming out called The Do-Over that comes out, I think, tentatively right now in August.
Okay.
And it's one of his best movies. It's me, him, and Spade, Paula Patton, Michael Chiklis, and it's a really small cast. And I might be forgetting somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the core of the film. And it's epic, dude. It's really good. And it's kind of a dark comedy, and Spade plays it straight. He doesn't like, he's not okay. Like smarmy or like sarcastic Spade. So it's a role he hasn't really done before, and it's cool, man.
So you're pretty much just working steady, nonstop with Happy Madison.
I mean, pretty much. I mean, I do, you know, I still do stand up. So yeah, I mean, I've been able to, fortunately, work.
Just keep working, right?
Yeah, I mean.
Let me ask. I forgot to ask this before. What was Rob doing playing Mark Twain in the Senseless Six? You guys each play a historical character in that movie.
It was the most bizarre casting.
Like, who are you in it?
I play like a member of a gang. My gang is me, Forte, Steve Zahn, Lavelle Crawford, and Paul Sato.
Okay.
So that's us and Jared Sandler. And so we're this other gang, and so it's pretty awesome. And so, yeah, but then I remember Sandler, I can't remember, we were probably in his office or something, and he's like, yeah, dude, he goes, we're gonna get Rob back in the movie. And I'm like, oh, that's great, dude, I love Rob. And he goes, yeah, he's going to play Mark Twain. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, dude, I'm going to be this Mark Twain. I'm like, yeah, that's so random. But, like, he was so funny, dude. It was – if you haven't seen it, I swear to God, watch Ridiculous Six. Ridiculous Six.
I said Senseless.
It's okay. It's a goofy movie. You know what I mean? It's just one of those movies you just zone out and just watch just a
Netflix
bunch of guys.
Netflix and chill.
Yeah, just Netflix, chill out, right, watch on. A silly Western. Anyway, just see Rob as Vanilla Ice as Mark Twain. Too good. Blake Shelton, too. He was great.
Last question for you. What's your favorite character that you played, if you had to choose one that pops in your head?
Maybe Terry from Reno 911.
That was great. Terry Bernardino.
I would probably say Terry just because the entire show is improvised.
Is it really?
100%. There was not one line of dialogue that was ever written on the show.
What, did they just give you like a description of today?
They give us the location. So they just call me and they'd be like, yo, what's up, dude? And I'm like, what's up, man? And they're like, yeah, we're shooting at this like taco stand in North Hollywood. And I'm like, okay. And that was it. And I would just show up. And then like sometimes they would have scenarios like, yeah, so what should we do? Like maybe, I don't know, like just maybe the, you know, pretend like you're illegally doing someone's taxes. And I'm like, okay. And then they would just come out and we would improvise. So that was my favorite because, you know, I never knew what the f*** was
going to happen. Right, you never know where it's going,
And we would just say the craziest shit to try to make each other laugh.
Yeah.
So, like, the more outlandish, like, that was our goal, was just to crack each other up. And my character was so crazy that I would just say the craziest shit. I would break everybody up, like, all the time. Like, I was just,
you
like...
You could do it.
Always like crushing those dudes. But yeah, that was fun. And like people, that was another show I pitched. So Reno 911 got canceled. So I pitched a spinoff of Terry called Terry PI, where Terry becomes a private investigator.
Yeah.
And he's just terrible. You know, he's like, oh my God, I found a clue. And he like never solves any mysteries or anything.
The guy
Comedy
gets away every
Comedy
time.
Central was like, nah, I don't think anybody would watch that. I'm like, are you kidding
Comedy
me?
Central, give Swartzen a chance.
What the fuck?
Come on. Can't you tell?
And then now all I hear is everyone's like, I miss Terry. What happened to Terry? can Terry ever come back? I'm like, I'm trying. Like, people.
Terry versus the gay robot. Boffo box office, baby.
Oh, my God. That would be just Avatar budget.
Thanks, Swartzen. I like your penis.
Yeah, my penis is. Love
you. I'll walk you down the stairs.
Sweet.
So, Nick, part of the star-studded lineup hitting the road on the Adam Sandler and Friends Do-Over Comedy Tour starting May 19th in San Francisco, 22nd Santa Barbara, California, 23rd Chicago, 24th Washington, 25th Brooklyn, 26th Boston, 27th Uncasville at the Mohegan Sun. Go online and get the tickets. I'm sure you go check it out. You're going to want to see this because Adam rarely does stand-up, and he certainly doesn't do stand-up tours anymore. And how great is that lineup? Adam Sandler, David Spade, Rob Schneider, and, of course, Nick Swartzen, who is a gas on this show. You're going to laugh your ass off. I guarantee it. And thanks to Nick for being here and taking up some time and sharing some time with us. Hilarious. And also thanks to Nick Mundy from Team Tiger Awesome for giving me the assist to help me hook that up. That's about the only nice thing I'm going to say about Mundy. But if you haven't checked out last week's episode, the summer movie preview, oh my gosh, one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. Still laughing about chodes and taints and whether Jeff Goldblum is hot and Weekend at Bernie's. Please go back and check it out if you haven't. I guarantee you're going to laugh. And one big last thank you to all of you Talk is Jericho fans for supporting the great sponsors of this podcast, including the one who's been here since episode one, Amazon. Please use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links whenever you do any online shopping. Easiest way to support the show. All my Amazon links are at podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the right top corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Amazon links for the USA, UK, and Canada. Every time you use those links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to help us cover production costs. You can get anything you want, and if you buy something, be a Talk is Jericho Amazon warrior. Post a picture on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. I'll retweet you and follow you as well. So go to podcastone.com and find all the other great sponsors, including ddpyoga.com/Jericho and the DDP Yoga Now app. DDP Yoga, buy that workout at ddpyoga.com/Jericho and get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. Go to harrys.com, use my promo code Jericho to get $5 off your purchase. Go to the workswitchdriver.com and use my promo code Chris to get 10% off and free shipping. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button at iTunes if you haven't already. That way you won't miss any of the great conversations and hilarious stories with the ones you heard today with Nick Swartzen last week with Team Tiger Awesome. Great wrestling guests, music guests, paranormal guests. You know the deal. Hit the subscribe button, leave a 5-star rating and a comment or two. I really do read the comments. Thank you so much for being you. And also, too, my good buddy Kevin Owens has started a GoFundMe page for the victims and the people that were stuck up in the horrible fires that are going on right now in Fort McMurray. And if you've seen anything about that, it's like watching people in hell. The fires are so bad. 80,000 people have lost their homes. They've been evacuated. It is not a good moment. So if you go to Kevin's Twitter, Fight Owens Fight, at Fight Owens Fight on the Twitter. Tyler Breeze is involved. Both of them putting together this great, great charity, lending a helping hand to the people that have been affected by this horrible fire. So go do that now. And also go subscribe on YouTube to CC and Shy's vlogs and videos. They want to get 1,000 subscribers. They're 30 subscribers away. These are my twin daughters. They put up amazing videos, creative videos. It's CC, that's S-I-S-I. And that's the ampersand, the and sign, Shy, C-H-E-Y, apostrophe S, CC and Shy's vlogs and videos. Please go subscribe if you don't already subscribe. And that's about it. So thank you for listening, and keep listening for the 60-second APA News headlines coming next. And on Friday, I got my old friend, Dr. Luther Lenny St. Clair. If you heard the 25th anniversary episode, he was on there telling some great stories along with Don Callis and Lance Storm. He is back. Solo interview with Lenny. Hilarious stories about living in Japan, working with Stampede Wrestling, FMW, all of the indies in Calgary. You're not going to want to miss this. Lenny St. Clair will be here on Friday, and I expect to see you then. Thank you so much. Stay hard, stay cool, stay hungry, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.